You're listening to the Archaeology Podcast Network.
You're listening to The Archaeology Show. TAS goes behind the headlines to bring you the real stories about archaeology and the history around us. Welcome to the podcast.
Hello and welcome to The Archaeology Show, episode 240.
On today's show, we talk about Greece. Again. For the last time.
Let's dig a little deeper.
Hold on, not for the last time though, right?
I mean, well, I've already dug deep though, so it better be the last time. I can't go any deeper than this. Welcome to the show, everyone. How is it not going?
I don't know how to answer that, so I'm just going to say it's going well.
Yeah, it's been a fall. And an autumn, whatever you want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
We missed another episode last week. Sorry to our edge of the cedars.
Yeah. I mean, I like wasn't even going to acknowledge it because I think that most people like don't even notice probably. But yeah, we were just so busy.
Yeah, it was just a lot. Yeah. And we were on a heavy push across the country, too, with our RV. And it's just been, you know, a lot of driving. So,
yeah, since last weekend, we've gone from Las Vegas to eastern Oklahoma. We're in basically directly south of Tulsa right now. So it was a lot of driving in like a few days. And plus we're trying to work around that too. So it's just been a week and we don't even have any fun things to say about the area that we're in really because
we're in our RV.
We're in our RV and we're not even experiencing it. We're just like stopping in order to work. But we'll get to North Carolina eventually, which is where I'm from, to spend the holidays with my family. So yeah. And then we'll be able to settle down and be less busy.
Yeah. So much like North Carolina, the city of Athens has been continuously inhabited for well over 5,000 years.
Well, I was about to immediately say that's not true, but I mean, it probably is true. Like there's Native Americans in the area like for a long time.
At least 10,000 years documented.
Yeah. So yeah, totally true.
And some would say, according to a site in South Carolina, well over 25,000 years.
Ooh,
but that is not totally.
That is definitely on the fringes still. There's not a whole lot of.
Only because there's not that many.
Well, it just needs more research and more science to back it up. So let's not go down that road.
Well, you know.
There's a whole podcast we did about pre-Clovis sites. I think a series even that you can go listen to where we talked about all the sites that are.
Did we talk about
supposedly
that
older? Topper?
Topper.
I think we did.
All right.
Anyway, yeah.
We could bring on a guest that's worked there. He's a co-host of the Life in Ruins podcast.
Oh, that's right. Anyway.
Anyway, yeah, this is our last Greece episode. And
it is. And we really wanted to do this one justice, which is partly why we didn't just like slam it out last Saturday. Because we could have. We thought about it. But we were like, no, we need to do like some good research and like really know what we're talking about. Because Athens, I don't know, for me, it was my favorite part about the trip, I think. The town is so vibrant and you know it's got its like rough edges too and all the archaeology is amazing and everything about it was just so like vibrant and alive. I loved it there so much.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. There was so much to do and it was neat because we were in this neighborhood that felt like we were in the heart of a big city but also in a tiny little neighborhood.
Yeah,
like you know because there was like little establishments, restaurants, coffee shops.
I know that there's really great food to be had all over Athens, but we ended up just eating in all the restaurants and cafes near the Airbnb we were staying at and like we got like chatting and friendly with a couple of the people at the various restaurants and bars and stuff. So it was just it's just a great experience. Yeah. The neighborhoods really make it feel like you're in a small town rather than a huge city.
Right.
So anyway, Athens, love it. Right. Go visit.
So on this show, we're going to talk about a number of the big sites that we saw there because there's a lot of good stuff to see. There's the obvious stuff like the Acropolis and the Parthenon on top of the Acropolis.
Yes.
But then there's a whole bunch of other stuff that, you know, if you're in Athens, you're probably going to see these things.
Yeah.
But then you may not have time to see all of these things. In fact, there's stuff we didn't have time to see.
Yeah. And some of it was further away and we were mostly walking to see this stuff. So we just didn't have time to do it all. But you'll see when you go to buy tickets to these things that they want you to buy like the combined ticket to see everything, which is what we ended up doing. It was we knew we weren't going to be able to see everything, but I think it ended up still being worth it to buy that like combined ticket. Yeah. And just go see whatever you can possibly see. So, yeah.
Yeah. And on what day of the month is it pretty much free for all that stuff?
Well,
it's like the first Sunday of the month or something.
I think it was the day that we got there was like September 20.
Oh, it was the last weekend.
23rd and 24th. Yeah. But it's not all last weekends of the month. It is. It was that weekend in particular was free, the free day for, right. for Greece. All sites around the country, I think, are free that day. So, so we saw a bunch of them for free on that first day, but then we did want to go back and experience it more later on. So,
yeah, for sure.
There's a lot to see. One day is not enough.
Right. All right. Well, this first segment, this being the archaeology show, we're going to talk about basically the history of Athens, which largely involves the Acropolis.
Yes.
Right. It's a central focus of like the history of the entire thing. So, yeah. So we're going to talk about that. Like I said, Athens has been continuously inhabited for well over 5,000 years. And we say well over because,
for sure longer than that. But
people have been in that area as modern humans for like 100,000 years.
Yeah.
Right. So it's, when you say continuously inhabited, we know that up to 5,000 years ago, people were like based there.
Yeah.
Right. Agriculture. Mm-hmm. They were living there. They were having families there.
Established settlements there by 5,000 years ago, at least, if not older than that. So, yeah.
Yeah. In fact, going back to the Acropolis, pottery finds on the northwest slopes of the Acropolis contained burnished pots of high quality, showing that Athens had 5,000 years ago a settled population with technical and artistic standards, meaning that they had been there for quite some time at that point. You know, I doubt they could have like moved in with all that.
Yeah. But
it's more likely they moved in a while before that and they just established that there.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
And a quick note on the terminology here, because this is something that always got a little confused in my head too. But you'll hear us say the Acropolis and then there's the Parthenon.
Mm-hmm.
And what you should know is that the Parthenon is a structure within the Acropolis. And the Acropolis is an area. It's like high city. Isn't that what that means? Top of the city. It's basically the settlement at the top of the hill. And lots of places had Acropolises. There are Acropolises in other cities. So this is the Athens Acropolis that we're talking about and all the structures that are there.
Yeah.
So just keep that in your brain. It was hard for me to, you know, figure out what was what when I first was learning about this too. So,
well, yeah, lots of older cities were typically based around one of two things, either a port or a hill.
Yeah.
Because hills are where you put the defensible things, right? That's where you're going to stand your ground, right? So lots of Greek cities had Acropolises because it's a very hilly place.
Mm-hmm.
And there was also a lot of big port cities too, like Piraeus, which is a city that grew up alongside Athens, but back in the day was kind of a ways away.
Yeah.
You know, we just took a taxi there, took 40 minutes to get there.
Yeah.
We got on our cruise ship.
But the like monumental architecture that really does last through time.
Yeah.
That kind of stuff you're going to find on the Acropolis. And that is true in this case too.
Yeah, for sure. So that 5,000 years ago is in this area, what's known as the Neolithic.
Mm-hmm.
Even though they've got pottery and things like that, that doesn't mean they're not technically in the Stone Age.
Right.
Because
it's still the Stone Age. Yeah.
Right. Because really the ages, as we discussed in a previous podcast, is not really based on other technology. It's literally based on, you know, stone and metal tools and things like that, which is a little bit crazy. And I don't think entirely accurate, but there it is. There are also indications from pottery of similar standards, those technological standards we talked about, during the Bronze Age, which is from about 3000 to 1500 BCE in that area. So a long time.
Yeah, for sure. And then around 1200 BCE, the first, you know, buildings or structures are starting to appear.
And starting to appear in the archaeological record.
Exactly. Like they had things before that, but it might have been made of the kind of materials that don't last. Or they were repurposed. Yeah, there's a lot of reasons why buildings and structures disappear from the archaeological record. It doesn't mean they didn't exist, though.
Right. I mean, it's entirely possible they had organic, you know, huts, trees and branches and things, and hadn't really got into quarrying and creating these big stone structures yet. But, you know, if they did, like we said, either they just haven't been found or, you know, they were repurposed into something else.
And with the Acropolis, too, it's an area that was constantly built over and up and over and over and over and over again. They would build it up and then it would go down. And, you know, like, so when you have so much building in one area, you do start to lose the traces of the older civilizations that were there because they're underneath everything, or they get wiped away when they dig up a whole hillside to do whatever they're going to do. So,
This time around 1200 BCE is just after this. This is about the time when the Acropolis was basically the citadel of the area, like the political and religious and influential area, because it was so prominent in the city.
It was.
And
it's where they would receive all the like visiting foreign dignitaries and that kind of thing. Like you would have a procession into the Acropolis. It was, you know, just, and it was so obvious. It's still to this day so obvious and visible on the top of the hill. So it was definitely like at the focal point of the city.
Yeah. Now, this area of Greece was known back then, and I think now as well, as Attica. And it was around this time, again, around 1,200 years ago, that a massive wall was constructed around the top of the Acropolis, and mm-hmm. some think that it marks the union of the 12 towns of Attica with Athens at the center. Athens was one of the 12 towns of Attica. Yeah.
Kind of that whole like city-states coming together sort of a situation.
So even back then, Athens was like becoming the capital of Greece, essentially.
Yeah.
Right? So, but I don't think they really called it Greece back then. I don't know when the term Greece came around, actually, well, in my research.
Be like Macedonian time frame, right?
I don't know when they started calling themselves Greeks.
Yeah. I'm not sure either, actually.
Yeah. Anyway, another interesting thing here is that most of the town at this time was south of the Acropolis. Mm-hmm. I mean, right now, it just like fills up the entire basin.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Up to the hills, you can see
it's houses. It's like from Piraeus. And then up the hill and on all sides of the hill. And
pretty
then
much everywhere.
The airport is even farther away than all of that.
And right.
The ride from the airport into town is like extremely long and through lots of tunnels because there's mountains and stuff all around too. So, yeah.
And in fact, remains of wells and houses have been found on that southern side of the Acropolis. Mm-hmm. And we saw some of those because they built the Acropolis Museum, which is this crazy thing that we'll talk about, but
cool contemporary building. Yeah.
Yeah. They built the Acropolis Museum over the top of these ruins with these huge supports that support the museum over the top of it. And there's ongoing work going on down there, but there's pathways all around with nice reader boards and stuff. And you can see a lot of the house structures and pits and things that we're talking about right underneath there. And these date back to a little more recent than that, but proof that there were buildings, you know, back down in that area.
I mean, it was continuously occupied by people at some point or another, you know, and I just love that they decided to preserve the archaeology rather than filling it back in. Because I don't know if most people might not realize this, but when you excavate something, you don't just leave big holes in the ground. Mm-hmm. You put the dirt back on top of it because you've gotten all the data out of it. You're done. You've collected what you need. And then either it gets dug up because it's not significant enough to preserve, or you dump the dirt back in on top of it. But not in this case. They just left it open as a museum exhibit, which is really cool.
Basically. Yep. The main cemetery for the area was to the northwest, and it literally called the necropolis, just what they called cemeteries.
Mm-hmm. Or Keramikos.
Yeah, City of the Dead.
Yeah.
Anyway, we'll talk about that later because we actually went and visited that.
We did, yeah.
And then there were several richly furnished chamber tombs and some smaller ones discovered near that area as well that became known as the Agora. Mm-hmm. And so we'll talk about that too, because the Agora, we actually went to our first weekend in Athens.
Yes,
In Athens.
Yes.
And then we went there again. Well, we kind of went there again.
We sort of walked around it. Yeah. It's a lot and it's huge. And we had so many different places we wanted to see. We couldn't visit again, but
So again, at this time, Athens was relatively peaceful for centuries, and pottery styles show an unbroken development from sub-Mycenaean, which means later than Mycenaean, but not yet Greek, to proto geometric, they called it. And that's just the types of style. We'll talk about that in a second.
Yeah.
That's around 1000 BCE to about 750 BCE. Mm-hmm. The geometric style was actually a style of Greek art, and it had pots with horizontal bands filled with patterns and other geometric shapes. You've seen these. They're like these, almost like these black bands with squiggles and stuff like that, but it's very
like triangular, very straight and very geometric.
Which I always like objected to the word geometric meaning straight lines, because circles are geometric as well. And so are squiggly lines.
It's true.
It's all geometry.
But I have a question for you. If it's not a right angle.
It's a wrong angle. 100%.
Nerd. Okay, go on.
All right. In the 6th century BC, Athens expanded during the reign of Pisistratus. Probably the wrong pronunciation.
That's close enough.
Yeah. And his sons. And they also weren't very nice people. Mm. Yeah. They were pretty much tyrants, the entire family.
Yeah.
The site of the Parthenon was first a temple to Athena called the Hecatompedon, which actually just means 100-footer.
Yeah, we'll talk about that more in the next segment, but yes.
it was built around 580 BCE.
Mm-hmm.
And then continuing on the timeline here, in 566 BCE, exactly, the precursor to the modern-day Olympics, the Panathenaic Games, was started. Mm-hmm. And that was by Pisistratus in honor of Athena, and they took place every 4 years. Mm-hmm. So that was the first Olympic Games, basically, but they didn't call it that.
Yep.
In the 600s BCE, the old agora in the lower town on the western approach to the Acropolis became inadequate for what they were using it for.
Mm-hmm.
So they designed a new one. They tore down. In fact, this is modern city expansion.
Yeah.
I mean, nothing's different 2,500 years ago.
I know.
But they tore down houses.
I'm guessing it was basically the Greek version of gentrification, probably.
Yeah, eminent domain. Yeah. You know, they're like, we need this area. Yeah. We need to put more columns up because we don't have enough. But they tore down houses in this whole area on the, I think it was on the northwestern side of the Acropolis.
Yeah.
We walked over there. It was pretty cool. Mm-hmm. They filled in wells and they created a broad open square, and it was used for political, religious, ceremonial, and judicial gatherings. Mm-hmm. The columns over there were just gigantic.
Yeah.
I mean, gigantic. In 480 BCE, the city was destroyed by guess who?
The Persians.
That's right.
They are the Persians and the Venetians, man. They have had so many cameos in these stories.
I know. And they also destroyed the Acropolis and everything on top of it.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah.
Which, again, we'll talk about that more in the second segment when we go through the actual Acropolis.
Yeah. Athenians returned about a year later and built even larger walls than before, which, again, didn't help later on. But they built larger walls. And this is also when something really cool was built called the Long Walls. And they connected Athens with the port at Piraeus, 4 miles away. Mm-hmm. They were a corridor of walls 550 feet wide. So they could basically transport goods between Piraeus and Athens.
Yeah.
Even while possibly enemies were just roaming the countryside.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's so cool. So they just built a path basically that was protected.
And they probably had archers and stuff on the walls. And but just the walls themselves were formidable. So
For sure. Yeah. I mean, the Athenians were good at walls.
Right.
They weren't always good at keeping those walls intact because they definitely got invaded several times throughout history. But they definitely built a lot of walls, and we'll talk more about the types of building material and stuff that they use for those walls. And they did a lot of that.
All right. Well, we don't really want to talk a little bit anymore about Athens because it becomes basically modern city by then. They put up a Starbucks in 350 BCE.
I think they put up like
basically downhill,
I don't know,
from
like
there.
A Souvlaki shop probably.
Yeah, but probably.
There's one in every corner and they're all delicious.
Yeah. But we don't have time to really go through the whole history of Athens. We wanted to cover the ancient history because that covers some of what we're going to talk about in the next couple of segments.
Yeah.
And we'll do that on the other side of the break. Welcome back to The Archaeology Show, episode 240. Don't just shake your head.
I'm not engaging with that joke anymore.
You know, I was looking at iTunes reviews today
for
some of the Archaeology Podcast Network shows, and I got over to ours. Uh-huh. There were some really good ones. But then I got right back to that one that's from like May, where the person was like, good show ruined by inane chatter. And I was like, actually go F yourself.
Well, I mean, you know what? That's fine, because we have our chatter and it's our back and forth banter. It's who we are. And if you don't like it, that's fine. There's plenty of other podcasts out there.
That's right. All right. Now with more inane Greece chatter, here we go.
Yep.
All right. So now we're going to talk about the Acropolis and the Parthenon. First off, again, the Acropolis is so foreboding, right? Like our first night in Athens before we went on the cruise, we had one night there. We had this Airbnb. And we were so excited to have a view of the Parthenon and the Acropolis from that Airbnb.
Like, I spent hours researching to find a place where we would have a view. And I actually was only looking for a rooftop view because all these hotels have rooftop bars, you know? And I was like, cool, we'll just go have a glass of wine and enjoy the view. But our room actually had a view.
Yeah.
And then we got there and it turns out that like basically everywhere in the city has a view of the Acropolis.
It's hard not to have a view.
It is really hard not to. No, some views are better than others. That's for sure.
Yeah.
But you can see it from everywhere and you see why it's so important.
Yeah. And right at sunset, they light it up.
They do.
The Parthenon in particular, but also like the edges of the Acropolis.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it is just a prominent like structure that you just can't miss.
It's just such a distinctive feature of the city.
Yeah.
You know, and you can see it from everywhere. So, I don't know. I really enjoyed having it. We had a view from our bed of the Acropolis in the second place that we stayed at, which was just amazing. So,
We'll talk about our experiences going there in a little bit.
But
let's first talk about some history of the Acropolis and the Parthenon.
Yeah. So it is a UNESCO World Heritage Site, of course.
What's not in Greece?
Right. And it is on the list because the Acropolis and its monuments are universal symbols of the classic spirit and civilization and form the greatest architectural and artistic complex bequeathed by Greek antiquity to the world.
That's a pretty bold statement.
That is a lot of fancy words to basically say that it's a really effing awesome example of Greek architecture.
I hope they have the exact same description on the pyramids of Giza, right?
I feel like they should, except for Egypt instead of Greece. Yeah, totally. Yeah. So like we've said a couple times, what makes it special is it's located on this flat rock outcrop, basically, that rises above the whole city. It's visible from everywhere. It's very defensible. great location.
It's also not like anything else geologically around the whole area.
No, it's really not. Like, it's like a mesa. There are cliff walls coming down from the Parthenon on some sides of it. Yeah. So, yeah.
And you can see occasional cliff walls on the striking hills around you, but they're more like rolling hills, right?
Yeah.
There's a lot of bedrock coming through, but it just looks different than anything else around there.
It does.
So it would have been a natural place for people to be like, that's important.
Yeah. Let's put something. If I get up there, nobody can touch me for sure.
Exactly.
So we touched on this a little bit in the first segment, but the earliest evidence of occupation is in the Middle Neolithic period in the 6th millennium BCE. And then by the Bronze Age, the Mycenaeans had built a palace on the hill as well as a massive wall around it. So that was, like we were saying, it's like the first instance of structures being built in that time frame. There were several temples and structures built over the years, and we're just going to go through a few of them now, like the most important ones, the ones that we have evidence for. There's probably more there that we don't know about. And like, there's just a lot of occupation over the many thousands of years. And, you know, now that people are still there too, you know, there were several temples and structures, beginning with the entry gate or the old Propylaea and the Hecatompedon, which was the first temple to Athena. And then also there was another temple to Athena called the Old Temple to Athena.
Yeah, Athena was pretty important.
Very important to the people of this area. Yeah,
and the Propylaea is when you're taking the tour of the Parthenon, they basically lead you in and out of that gate, just like you would have, you know, 2,500 years ago.
It's really cool to walk in that way.
Yeah.
Now, we'll talk about that a little bit more, like our actual experience with it. But yeah, you go right in through the Propylaea now as it stands. Mm-hmm. There was an old one there. And like I said, two temples to Athena. They were built a few decades apart, but in the mid 6th century BCE. But yeah, I mean, Athena was just that important that they had two temples, right?
Yeah.
So the Hecatompedon was built where the current Parthenon is. And it was dismantled around 500 BCE to make way for not the current Parthenon, but what they call the Old Parthenon.
Yes. And the current Parthenon, just in case you're keeping track, is actually in Memphis, Tennessee.
Oh,
and
God.
Then there's the other Parthenon in Athens. And then the other Parthenon.
I don't think we really talk about the Tennessee one. But
and something we just heard from our one of our favorite YouTube channels, the Sailing Channel. There's apparently a Parthenon of Mexico.
The Parthenon, built by basically a dictator, like
An evil police chief.
Yeah, an evil police chief. Cool.
Yeah. So
that probably is wrong. So don't send us letters. Or if you do, who should they send them to?
A life in ruins at gmail.com.
Okay. So the old temple to Athena, this is at the same time as the Hecatompedon.
Yeah.
There's also the old temple to Athena, and it was built sort of in between where the current Parthenon is and the current Erechtheion, which we will talk about in a little bit. So that was sort of the arrangement. It's really hard to visualize. Honestly, the best way to visualize this is to just go on the web. And we've got some links in the show notes to just go see where these places are and were and what's there now. So, yeah.
Now, this whole thing was destroyed by, guess who?
Our favorite sackers, the Persians.
They just couldn't get enough. Right. Yeah. They're like, that Acropolis, we got to have it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, the second Persian invasion took place in Greece during 480 and 479 BCE. We did mention that before. It was reconstructed in 454 BCE and then finally burned down in 406 and 405 BCE.
Yeah, that was the history of that, that temple. So, yeah. Now, the old Parthenon, which we haven't gotten to the new one yet, so keep that in your mind. The old Parthenon was under construction when the Persian invasion happened. And so it got destroyed, basically, and looted, like they all did. So they wanted a larger structure there where the Parthenon was, and then it got interrupted by this invasion.
Yeah.
And many of the pieces from the unfinished old Parthenon were incorporated into this newly built curtain wall, they call it, which they built that after the Persian invasion just for better protection. But what's really interesting about this is that these pieces that they used, like columns and stuff like that, were really prominent and visible in the wall around the Acropolis.
Mm-hmm.
And the one article I read sort said they were using it sort of as like a memorial. I'm not sure that we can go as far as saying that, but
it definitely
was like a visible piece of the old Parthenon that was part of the wall now that you can see. And you can see that still today. There's like those columns that are just randomly in the wall going around the Parthenon.
Right.
So, yeah. The other thing that they did after they kicked the Persians out was that they buried all of the damaged statues, the religious objects, anything unusable from the looting and the destruction that happened. Yeah. They buried them all in a pit together. And that was to basically serve its fill for future structures. They made a platform out of it, essentially.
Yeah, in 1890, that was excavated in one of the most fascinating archaeological digs, you know, ever, though archaeology just started back then.
Weird, right? To like be excavating all of this completely out of original context, but also in context for when it was put in the ground like that.
Right.
Like such an interesting like piece of archaeology to be involved in.
It's
really cool.
Yeah, a lot of what was dug up there is on display right now in the current Acropolis Museum.
Yeah.
Which we took a look at.
We did. We went through there. It was really cool. And like a lot of the statues, you could see the fire damage on them and stuff. Some of the pieces that they had pulled out. Most of them were broken. I don't think they had any like fully complete ones in that section of the museum that we went through.
Yeah.
They were all pieces, but
they were destroyed. They buried them for a reason.
Yeah. Yeah. But it is a really cool thing to see the way they have it displayed there. So you can see what used to be there before, you know, the Persians.
Mm-hmm. The Golden Age of Athens was around 460 to 430 BCE. They really recovered from the Persian invasions.
Yep.
this is when a lot of the major structures were built by order of Pericles.
Yeah.
And this includes the current Propylaea that we went through, which again was just amazing, which was in part built on top of the old one, like they do most things over there. Also, the small temple of Athena Nike, which is like her full name, located next to the Propylaea.
Nike is the goddess of victory or whatever. So they were basically like saying war and victory is here. Yes.
But it was like Athena representing victory.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Athena. Yeah.
Which I like to think of as her full name. Athena. Miss Nike.
Miss Victory. Yeah. And Pericles, we shouldn't just gloss over him. He was like the driving force behind the building of a lot of these major structures that are still there today. So thanks to that guy, we've got the Acropolis the way it is now, basically.
Yeah. Oh, and he built the Parthenon.
Oh, yeah, that too. That little thing there.
That shack on the hill. The Erechtheion was also built around that time, and it was built on uneven ground. I mean, the Acropolis isn't exactly level.
No.
You know, you'd have to level areas of it.
It's a hilltop, but it's definitely got a slope to it.
Yeah. And likewise, it's not symmetrical like a lot of Greek temples.
Yeah. When we saw it, we were like looking in on one side, but it slopes steeply down away from that main entrance.
Yeah.
But my favorite part about the Erechtheion is the porches. So it has two porches, which I guess is unique to begin with. And the one to the southwest, the structure of the porch was supported by what they call caryatids, which are female statues instead of columns.
Yeah.
And that was I think that is hands down my favorite thing. It was my favorite thing in the museum and also my favorite thing up at the Acropolis, because it's just like ladies being ladies holding up the building, right? Because that's what ladies do. We hold stuff up. Mm-hmm. They have this amazing hair. Like, I don't know. The detail was just so cool in those statues. So
they've got a little jaunty leg out, too. And there's a picture of Rachel standing with those in the background trying to jaunt her leg out. I'll try to include it in the post on Sunday.
Please don't. I did not give you permission for that. So I mentioned they're in the museum and also at the Acropolis. And that's because the originals have been removed and reproductions were put into their place on the Acropolis because of the damage. There's a lot of acid rain, I guess, in Greece. And
yeah, it's a big city.
Yeah. And then also just like damage over the years. So they brought them in and there's a really cool display in the museum where you can see how they've been cleaning them up and the restoration that they've been going through. So, yeah. So the Erechtheion, it's an interesting building, really, just all around because it seems to have been like a joint place of worship for both Athena and Poseidon Erechtheus.
Yeah.
Which sounds weird. Poseidon would be the god of the ocean, right? And then Erechtheus was like supposedly the first king of Athens or something like that. He was called Erechtheus. And then the Parthenon has the whole story in the what are they called up at the top there? Not the metopes, but the...
Oh, I don't remember. The big mural thing on each end.
Yeah, and they've got the whole story of Poseidon versus Athens. Versus Athena, and then Athena won, and that's why it became Athens. But Poseidon is still very important to the people of Athens, so he gets a little, like, small temple to the side, basically. So, yeah.
Right. There was later construction on the Acropolis of monuments to Roman emperors and other foreign kings, of course. Also, something cool that's not exactly on the Acropolis, it's down on the down on the slopes there.
Yeah.
It's called the Odeon, and it was built by the Roman Herodotus Atticus in 161 CE. It was destroyed a century later, but then rebuilt in the 1950s. Mm-hmm. 1950s.
Yeah, right? 1950s.
Yeah. Today it's a music venue.
Yeah.
And in fact, we tried to get, we looked for tickets, but they weren't playing anything while we were there.
Yeah. So. We were just in a kind of a lull for the venue, unfortunately, because it would be so cool to go to a 2,000-year-old, you know, amphitheater, basically.
I know. That's basically what it is.
Yeah.
I mean, you're sitting on the, I don't know if they got like cushions or whatever, but you're sitting on like the stone benches and, you know, the stage, and it's just this whole crazy thing.
Yeah. So. You've got this big, tall, like, what would have been a structure behind it. So yeah, it looks really cool. There's been some really big names that have performed there over the years too.
Right.
So yeah.
So as we all know, the Acropolis has some damage on it, and notably the Parthenon.
Yeah.
The Parthenon's not exactly in great shape. In fact, when you look at it, it is, they're doing some restoration, and there's also some columns and things that have had pieces added to them to sort of fortify them, and they've used a distinctly different compound so you can tell what the old and the new is.
Yeah, they want you to know the different, the lighter color basically is the new stuff that they're putting in this restoration process that they're going through.
Also, part of this restoration is they're not restoring it back to like original Parthenon glory. They are restoring it back to basically when it was destroyed. It's just been falling apart more than that.
Yeah.
Right? So they don't want to forget. They don't want to, you know, remake the Parthenon. They're just trying to stabilize it, basically. Yeah. But why did it get destroyed?
Hmm.
Well, wasn't the Persians this time.
Not the Persians.
It was our other favorite people.
Who could it have been?
No. These people that all they wanted to do was deliver pizza to Athens. But they brought with them artillery, and it was the Venetians.
Why would you say pizza?
Because pizza's everywhere, and the Venetians...
The Venetians don't have anything to do with pizza. That was Naples.
The Venetians literally brought pizza through Naples to Athens and pasta. All joking aside, we've talked about this before. No, there is a ton of Italian food in Greece.
There is. Yes.
Like
Greece is heavily influenced by Italian.
There's Venetian architecture. There's Italian food. I mean, that's not all a coincidence. I mean, I know it's just across the bay.
Yes.
But, and everybody loves a good pizza.
Yeah.
So.
Well, the Venetians were making the rounds through the Adriatic, and they were just.
Sacking and pillaging.
Yep. They were taking whatever they could. And in 1687, during the Venetian siege of Athens, during the Morean War, the Parthenon was being used as a gunpowder magazine.
Seemed like an oversight.
Well, they didn't really care much about the Parthenon at that point. It wasn't important.
They probably also didn't think it could be destroyed.
They probably didn't. They probably thought this is the safest place in town because it's surrounded by huge marble walls or columns. I guess not walls so much, but
yeah.
Well,
and the cool thing is there's a hill that you can see. I think it's to the southwest of the Parthenon, and there's a big structure on that. And the Venetians were actually stationed right there. And it's a long ways away, it looks like.
Long ways away.
But they were hurling these artillery shells. What were they? What would they have been? I guess like flaming cannonballs or something, probably.
Something like that. Some kind of artillery.
Yeah. But they had just a lucky shot that happened to hit that gunpowder magazine and just blew the crap out of the Parthenon.
Yeah. It almost landed like right in the middle of it. And it took out most of that southern side, right? The one that we could see from our Airbnb.
I think so.
And then also some of the columns on the other side too. It just was like a direct shot. So that's why when you think of the Parthenon, you think of those fallen down columns in the middle. You can thank the Venetians for that.
That's right.
I swear we're gonna do a Venetian episode because I feel like they need to be, I don't know, given some credit for all the things they did do.
We should do a whole series, like a season, call it True Crime, The Venetians. And then
everything
season 2 will be
Venetians destroyed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Well, anyway, that's the Acropolis and the Parthenon, which is, of course, the focal point of Athens. There's so much to see there. We didn't even really talk about our experience of going there. I think what is the biggest tip you would give anybody who wants to go visit the Acropolis?
The tip that we saw and didn't adhere to, which was go in the morning or go in the evening, right?
Yeah.
It's hot there, so it's going to be warm up on there. There's no shade.
Yeah.
We were lucky that it was warm and no shade, but it was actually relatively cool.
Yeah, because like, it was October, breezes. So it wasn't terrible. Yeah. But
the people, we were just in a line of people going up there, and they were just shuttling them through because you actually have time frames that you go. You have an hour that you have to go there, and then you get in, and everybody wants to get in right at the beginning of that hour. So you're just shuttling through the gate there, and then it kind of loosens up a little bit. But right at the Propylaea, when you're going up these steep steps, and if you're mobility challenge, you're not going to make it. But there is an elevator that'll take you up the sidewall of the Acropolis.
Oh, is there? Yeah. Okay, I didn't realize that. Yeah.
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
Yeah, definitely do that if you do have mobility issues. Because we saw some people
who
were really struggling. Yeah, and like, had they known about the elevator, I bet they probably would have taken that option. Because it's not a super accessible place.
It's very much not.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's steep steps. They're high.
Yeah. Yeah. But like, you are walking up the steps of the ancients, you know, it is the original steps of, you know, Greece in the golden age. And even though you're touching the elbows of people that you don't know, like the whole way up the steps and like around and when they lead you through and like, you might end up like sniffing somebody's hair and you didn't know who they were. And like, that kind of sucks. But
then here's the other thing. Once you get up there, I mean, you're just like, you're just like on your own.
Yeah.
And it really widens out.
It does.
And because they limit the number of people up there, that bottleneck, that's the Proplia, really opens up.
It opened up and it didn't feel so bad after that.
No. I mean, you can obviously take a guided tour. There were plenty of those. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. If you want to take a guided tour, do that. But I feel like with a bigger group, you're just being part of the problem and not the solution.
Yeah.
But if that's what you're part of, then do it. That's fine.
Yeah, for sure.
But we found actually a free app. What was it? Rick Steves?
Yeah.
Or something like that. Free audio guide that you can download that was actually really well done. Mm-hmm. And they guide you around. They tell you exactly where to go. And then they give you these, you know, tidbits of where you're at. And they say, face this direction and look at this. And then we'll tell you about it. And it was really, really well done.
Yeah.
And we just shared a headphone, basically. We each had one with the AirPods and we listened to that as we went around.
I like that it gave us control. Like when we wanted to stop and look at something a little bit longer or maybe wanted to get closer to something to take a photo. And you know how people like line up to take the photo ops, you know? So like,
The tours will push you through.
Yeah, they will. And you won't really have time and you have to keep going. But when you do it like this, it just feels so much more independent and we could stop and just enjoy the experience.
That's just a tip for, I think, most of Athens and Greece and probably lots of other areas is I didn't really know, or we hadn't really used too much these audio guides that are like all over the place. Now, some museums and things like that, they have their own like buy this tape recorder thing, you know, and you can listen to that. And those can be really well done, too. Like, I'll never forget going to Doon Castle in Scotland.
Oh, that was amazing.
Wasn't it narrated by Eric Idle?
Yes.
From Monty Python?
Yes.
That's where Holy Grail was shot.
Yep.
A lot of it anyway.
Yeah.
And there were just like Holy Grail references. And it was well done.
It was amazing. That was like totally worth all the money that we spent on it.
Yeah.
But
you can get, like I said, there's a lot of guides out there for a lot of places around the world that you can download an app and get the guides on there. They're usually $4 or $5.
Yeah.
You know, whereas a tour will cost you, you know, 8 times that amount.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, there's something to be said for the in-person interaction, of course.
Yeah.
But for us, we liked having, and we are archaeologists, so like we do know a little bit about what we're looking at, sort of.
Yeah.
You know, so like having the ability to control the tour and what kind of time we were spending in what areas. Right. And yeah, it just worked really well for us. So,
right.
Yeah, it was great.
Well, let's take a break and come back on the other side and talk about the City of the Dead. Welcome back to episode 240 of the Greek Archaeology Show. And except not after today.
Not after today. We'll leave Greece alone for a little while.
Yeah. So we already have a few corrections because we just realized, you know, we're just mowing through this thing and I said a few things wrong.
We went to so many different places. It kind of starts blending together.
Listen, when you see, it's like when you go to Scotland and you're like, oh, another castle. Like Athens is like another column, right?
Yeah,
another big
temple,
thing,
another right? Yeah.
It's all really cool, but it really
it's
just
all amazing.
Blends in your head. So
it does.
The Roman Agora, which is different than the other Agora, which means marketplace.
Yeah.
The Roman Agora is completely different than the thing that I mentioned earlier. I was talking about, what was it called? The
Temple to Olympian Zeus.
The Temple to Olympian Zeus. That was on the northwest side of the Parthenon, I believe. Mm-hmm. And that was a big open expanse, and it was just these massive columns.
The biggest columns we saw, basically out of probably any, it's even bigger than the Parthenon.
They were taller
columns,
for sure.
Right?
Yeah. I don't know what this thing looked like when it was new, but there wasn't a lot of it left except for these huge columns.
I think it was never fully finished, which is part of the reason why it was the way it was. Yeah. So.
So the Roman Agora was the thing that replaced the Agora that we're about to talk about.
Yeah.
Where they, you know, and that was closer to the original Agora.
It was. And the Roman Agora has a really cool big entry gate. Do you remember going under that? And then it has that round structure over in the corner too.
Yep, I remember it.
Much smaller, just because I think by the time we're doing this a little backwards, but we'll get the small stuff out of the way first. But the Roman Agora was just a smaller society, smaller everything by that time.
Yeah.
It just wasn't the quote unquote golden age of Greece when it was built and in use. So, yeah.
Interesting thing is, though, as the city was, you know, becoming much more populous, I mean, the big agora that we're going to talk about right now, it's massive.
It was massive.
And it was wide open.
Yeah.
Like, there doesn't seem to be evidence of a lot of structures. Like, people weren't living in there. When they stopped using that, I mean, I don't understand how they were able to keep it uninhabited for the most part. You know, there's some temples and things on there. Maybe it was just sacred or something, but it was a marketplace too. So
it was a market. It was everything. It wasn't just marketplace. It was a gathering place. It was where, you know, their whole judicial system was there, their courts, their jails, trials, everything, all of that happened in the Agora. So, you know, the Acropolis would have been the religious center of the city, right? It's or where you received important people. It was the ceremonial center of the city. Yeah. But the Agora was kind of like the heart for the people. You know, it's where all those things I just mentioned with the government were happening. So I don't know. It's almost more interesting to me from that perspective, because this is like where real life happened. Real Athenian life happened here in the Agora.
And it was used as a gathering place for those purposes for 5,000 years.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
And there were, like, in addition to the other things you mentioned, courts and prisons and courts that enforced Athenian law, of course.
Yeah.
Everything was there. So,
yeah, it was constant use from that time. It was built and destroyed and rebuilt in cycles over and over and over again.
Right.
So, yeah. Now, there are two main structures today that you can see when you go in. There's the extremely well-preserved temple of Hephaestus.
Yeah, that was cool.
Yeah, it's like up on a hill, of course. Because, you know, you always got to put a temple on a hill.
You can't go in because tourists suck.
No, I know. It would be so cool to actually go inside one of these things. But none of these structures were open to, like, actually walking inside. The closest you got to that is the Propylaea, although I think I've been saying that wrong, haven't I?
I think so.
What is it?
Propylaea.
Propylaea. Yeah.
That's how I heard it pronounced on Propylaea. Our little tour guide.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So the well, you know what? Forgive me for my terrible pronunciation.
Well, you know.
I'm not known for pronouncing things well.
If you had studied Greek over the summer.
You just pronounced that wrong. So
if you had studied Greek over the summer, you would know things.
Oh, would I?
Instead, you don't.
No, I'm good. Anyway, so this temple is extremely well preserved, really, really beautiful. And we've got some great pictures of it, which we'll probably share. And yeah, so that was one of the main structures that's left. And then there's also the huge Stoa of Attalos. Now, this is another one that they rebuilt in the 50s, similar to the Odeon Theater. And basically, they followed the plans of the ancient Stoa. And the reason that they sort of rebuilt it the way that it looks today is to store and display the artifacts they were finding during excavations in the Agora. They need a place to put them. So the marketplace, you know, back in the day, it would have been full of artisans, merchants, workshops, anything that you wanted to buy and sell would have happened in this area.
Yeah. And the Greeks loved, you know, orating. So it would have been a place of public debate as well. And the democratic political system developed and became the basis of our government today.
Yeah.
It's because, like, of all these things.
I know. Isn't it amazing to think that, like, half the governments in the world happened because of this, you know, of the great minds of this time frame. And what they were talking about and doing, and it's just really cool. So
it's not impressive necessarily as the Acropolis. And in fact, the Acropolis kind of looks down on it.
It does.
Or it looks up to the Acropolis.
Yeah, it's right below the Acropolis, basically.
What is it? They call it Mars Hill, I think. There's another name, too.
Which is the other hill.
It's at the top of the Agora between there and the Acropolis. Yeah. We went there and you just stand up on these rocks and it was just an amazing view of not only the Acropolis off to your right, but then the Agora down below. So,
yeah,
it was pretty impressive down there. But it was, again, a massive, massive area.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it's not where, like we've said, the foreign dignitaries were received or the religious offerings were made or anything. But it's, you know, it was where the people did their thing. They did the living thing there. And
yeah,
I just love that.
So when the people were ready to do the dying thing, they went to the
Keramikos,
the Athens necropolis.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that is actually, if you're walking around Athens right now, listening to our podcast, this is a terrible guy.
Oh, by the way. This is not a good guy. Yeah. Go find somebody else. There's way better ones.
Yeah. Don't listen to this.
Listen to this and get inspired to go to Athens.
Right. Watch out for the taxi. All right. So anyway, so the necropolis is actually not that far from the Agora. It was just a 5-10 minute walk for us. Yeah.
Yep. The Latinized version of Keramikos is Ceramicus.
Yeah.
And I loved this because it's where we get the English word ceramic from. So, and the reason for that is because Keramikos is in the northwest part of the Acropolis, and that would have been the potter section of the city back in the day. So ceramic, potter, Ceramicus, and now we get the word ceramic from that. So,
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, this was first used as a cemetery from the 3rd millennium BCE, and the first official cemetery was established about 1200 BCE, give or take. And just as a little side note here, I mean, you go in through their little museum that they've got there, mm-hmm. and there's a lot of good write-ups and things like that, and some, I guess, grave markers,
or
so
monuments,
to speak. Monuments, I guess, yeah. But yeah. some of these, I just started looking at the dates and I was like, that's not real. I mean, they were like 2,000 years old, 2,500 right? years old.
Yeah.
Some of the older ones. I mean.
And that's just the ones they had on display. Yeah. When you went to go down to the bathroom, I was just kind of wandering around and like, there's just piles of, yeah. I'm not sure headstone is the right word because that's what we call modern
yeah.
grave markers. But these columns and I don't know what you call them, but they were so old and there's yeah. so many of them. And they're not where they were originally. There's just like right. piles of them because they've excavated them and found them.
Yeah.
But the bodies that they're related to are long gone. So.
Yeah. And some of the monuments and things may be long gone as well because of what we're about to talk about next.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Keramikos is both inside and outside the old city walls at the Dipylon Gates, which is near the banks of the Eridanos River.
Yeah.
And after the Persian attacks on Athens in 480 BCE.
They have a drinking game. Persians, I'm taking a drink of wine. Yeah.
That Persian attack, man, it really did a number on Athens. Like so much of what we have left today was built because the Persians basically destroyed everything that was there
yeah.
before. So
Persians ruined everything.
They did, but you know what? They built up better. They did better after that. So
yeah.
But they did need a new city wall because they were very interested in protecting yeah. themselves in that moment.
And they needed it quick.
Yes, it needed to be quick and it needed to be good. So do you know what makes really good building material, as it turns out?
Marble that's already carved.
Marble that's already carved and not in the side of a hill.
Right.
So on the suggestion of Themistocles, all the funerary sculptures and mausoleums in the cemetery were used as building material in the wall.
Yeah.
Because they needed that material and they needed it quick. And you know yeah. what? It's right there. And probably, you know, the families are long gone. Like these were old yeah. sculptures and stuff at this point. So
this, yeah. this wasn't an uncommon thing. We had an article a few months back where we talked about a Koros, I think.
Oh, yeah.
And parts of ones, which was naked people statues.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Naked man specifically for the Koros.
Mm-hmm.
And just used as building material. Like yeah. the upper torso is just like in a wall.
Yeah. Like it might not yeah. be perfectly block shaped for the wall, but you know what? They didn't have to go cut it out of a mountain. So yeah. it was definitely better than doing that.
Right.
And when you need material and you need it quick, because you never know when those Persians are going to show back up again.
Yeah.
You know, you can't blame them really. So yeah.
Yeah. After that wall was constructed, the road known as the Sacred Way that entered the city gate in the south side, along with another road, the Street of Tombs, became lined again with lavish tombs and monuments of the rich Athenians.
Yeah, it's like they yeah. kind of forgot about what happened to all right. those old structures and like what happened before the Persians, you know, yeah. showed up. So, and then the rich Athenians are like building stuff up again because that's what they do.
Yep.
But in 317 BCE, the building of large tombs was banned by decree. And after that, only small columns or square blocks were allowed.
Right.
I'm not really sure why they were so against it. I guess they just didn't want it to be ostentatious or something like that.
I'm blaming Christians.
Not in 317 BCE. You can't blame them yet. Okay. Not yet.
It was definitely.
No, not yeah. yet.
I don't know. I think they just, you know, the city's big and they're like, you know what?
We don't have space for this.
Yeah, we don't need this right
yeah,
now.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they all moved to New Orleans and decided to build them there. Right. So.
Again, made up nonsense.
What are you talking about?
No, yeah. I think that was really interesting. And one of the really over the top big grave markers, I guess, mm-hmm. is on display in the museum there. And it even says that it's one of the very last ones that was allowed. And it's like these people, these lamentations, right? Like these, yeah. it's like a woman and then there's other people like crying all around her. And it was like they had to show how sad all the people were
right.
that this person had died.
Some of the representations and statues and carvings were just, they really were telling a story.
They were.
It was less,
yeah.
it was less a description of things, although there were inscriptions, which were really cool because, mm-hmm. like I said, I did try to learn some Greek over the summer, and the Greek alphabet, there is ancient Greek and there's modern Greek, but the Greek alphabet, it really hasn't changed a lot. There's definitely some differences, but mm-hmm. you can pick out some of the same symbols and things like that. And it's not like I could really read it, but it was like I could almost pick out certain syllables and words and things. And it was yeah. just really neat seeing these 2,500 year old things and going, Oh yeah,
I can
almost kind of get that. Like if I study a little longer,
yeah,
you could. I feel like one of those, you know, not necessarily Indiana Jones, but one of those older type of movies where like the old professor's with the candle inside of an Egyptian pyramid, yeah, going, "Oh, go to the golden sun on the thing." Yeah, shut up. But anyway, that's kind of what it felt like.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah, it was pretty neat.
It was really neat to see that, and I loved all the offerings that were also on display in that museum, mm-hmm, because when they've excavated the cemetery over the years, they're not just finding headstones or sculptures, yeah, you know, that were marking graves. It's also the offerings that people would leave, yeah, behind for their families. And it's sometimes just these like beautiful, beautiful pots and, mm-hmm, all kinds of stuff that were left for people. So,
oh, yeah,
that was definitely a big part of the burial tradition in ancient Greece, was the offering piece of it as well.
So, for sure.
Yeah.
All right, well, I think that's about enough for today, and it's enough for Greece. We're going to be back with a news episode so we can catch up. There's been a lot that's
so
happened.
So much news. I put, yeah, an article into our little planning area,
yeah,
from like 2 months ago that I'm still excited to talk about, but I can't believe it's been so long.
I've saved probably 15 articles on my Apple News,
yeah,
app. Yeah, it's, yeah, ridiculous.
I feel like we need to have like a couple news episodes to catch up.
Yeah.
But,
and you know, we're coming up into a holiday season, so expect us to miss an episode or two.
We
I'm
might.
Just going to say,
yeah,
you know, and then we've got some big events coming up in January too, but you know, we try to hit it every week, but we're also human.
So, yeah,
you know, sometimes it doesn't happen.
Yep.
So, I mean, if you do want it to happen, you could become a member of the Archaeology Podcast Network and fund these efforts because, yeah, you know, while we do appreciate the members that we do have, it doesn't quite pay for everything. And you do hear advertising on this too, that also really isn't paying for anything. That programmatic advertising, we get like 60% of that, and it's pennies. I mean, mm-hmm, literally pennies. So it takes a lot, and I want to get rid of all the advertising. So, mm-hmm, gift a membership, give somebody a membership.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
it's
this holiday,
right,
season.
Yeah, for sure.
And they can join in our Slack team and participate in conversations about these episodes with our other members, and also help keep the lights on over here.
Yeah, so, for sure.
Yeah. All right. With that, I guess we'll see you next time.
Mm-hmm. Bye.
Thanks for listening to The Archaeology Show. Feel free to comment and view the show notes on the website at www.arcpodnet.com. Find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at arcpodnet. Music for this show is called I Wish You Would Look from the band Sea Hero. Again, thanks for listening and have an awesome day. This episode was produced by Chris Webster from his RV traveling the United States, Tristan Boyle in Scotland, DigTech LLC, Cultural Media, and the Archaeology Podcast Network, and was edited by Rachel Roden.
This has been a presentation of the Archaeology Podcast Network. Visit us on the web for show notes and other podcasts at www.archpodnet.com. Contact us at chris@archaeologypodcastnetwork.com.